The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mark Newman from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall share with you information from various medical sources. From the Harvard Health Letter, we will continue on the article called Four Stretches to Keep Your Shoulders in Shape. Keeping your shoulder muscles flexible will help prevent injury. The muscles need to be long and flexible to stay healthy. You're more vulnerable to injury when your shoulder muscles are tight and restricted, explains Claire Safran Norton, clinical supervisor of rehabilitation services at Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital. How stretching helps. Muscles are a little like cotton fabrics. They may shrink up slightly, but if you pull on the fibers, you can stretch out the fabric again. Stretching your muscles fixes the shortening that occurs with disuse and extends muscles to their full length. The more you stretch the muscles, the longer and more flexible they'll become. That will help increase your range of motion, ward off pain, reduce the risk for injury, and improve your posture. Types of stretches. The best way to stretch muscles is with long, static, or motionless stretches that last 30 seconds to 2 minutes. But don't jump right to the step. Warm up the muscles first to get blood and oxygen to them and make them more pliable. You can do this with exercise. Take a brisk walk, pumping your arms, or go for a swim. Or you can try a few minutes of dynamic stretching, repeatedly moving a joint through its available range of motion without holding a position. Just roll your shoulders backwards and forward a few times, or make windmill motions with your arms, but not too vigorously. Insider tips. Safran Norton says that stretches should be gentle and pain-free. If there's pain, you may be injuring your muscles, she notes. She also warns never to bounce your stretched muscles, which can cause injury and keep you from a productive stretch. Bouncing sets off a protective mechanism called the stretch reflex. The muscles will recoil, so you won't overstretch it. But as a result, you'll never get to a true stretch, she says. A true stretch is sustained with no bouncing. Getting started. Try the shoulder stretches we've laid out. All you need is a doorway or a wall. And I'll review those four stretches in a minute. Safran Norton recommends stretching your shoulders 3 to 7 times per week. If you're really stiff, stretch daily. If you're already flexible, it's fine to stretch every other day, she says. But avoid stretching for too long or too vigorously. Back off quickly if you start to feel pain. Other tips. Make sure you stand up straight when you stretch and make sure you're hydrated. What about strengthening? You won't have strong shoulders if you don't strengthen them. Safran Norton recommends strengthening the shoulder muscles every other day. For shoulder strengthening suggestions, check out the Harvard Special Health Report, Healing Shoulder Pain, at www.health.harvard.edu/HSP. The combination of stretching and strengthening will act as a preventive approach to keep even a complicated joint ready for action. So the wall climb, the movement, stand up straight, facing a wall. Extend your right arm with your elbows soft, not locked, and place your hand on the wall at shoulder height. Slowly walk your fingers upward, stepping in toward the wall as your hand climbs higher. Stop when you feel mild tension in your shoulder. Hold 10 to 30 seconds. Slowly walk your fingers back down the wall and return to the starting position. Repeat 3 to 4 times. Switch arms and repeat. Chest and shoulder stretch movement. Stand alongside a doorway or a wall. Extend your right arm and put your right hand on the edge of the door frame slightly below shoulder level. palm facing forward and touching the door frame. Keep your shoulders down and back. Slowly turn your body to the left, away from the door frame until you feel the stretch in your chest and shoulder. Hold 10 to 30 seconds. Return to the starting position. Repeat 3 to 4 times and then repeat on the opposite side. Shoulder stretch, the movement. Stand with your feet hip width apart. Put your left hand on your right shoulder. Cup your left elbow with your right hand. Roll your shoulders down and back as you gently pull your left elbow across your chest. Hold 10 to 30 seconds. Return to the starting position. Repeat 3 to 4 times. Then repeat on the other side. And then finally, shoulder stretch with rotation. The movement, stand up straight with your feet hip width apart and your hands by your side. Place the back of your right hand against the small of your back and your waist. Your fingers should be pointing up. Slowly slide your right hand further up your back as high as you can. Hold 10 to 30 seconds. Repeat 3 to 4 times, and then repeat that with your left hand. 5 medications that can cause problems in older age. Prescription and over-the-counter medications may affect you differently now. Despite the beneficial effects of medication, some drugs need to be used with increasing caution as you age. Drugs that caused few, if any, side effects in your youth can now cause discomfort or even put you at risk for serious problems such as falls or bleeding. What's different in older age? Even though you may have taken a medication for decades, your body may react differently to it later in life. One reason for this is that your metabolism has slowed down. Some medicines need to be processed by your liver to benefit your health. Slower digestion and liver function mean it may take longer for a drug to get into your bloodstream. Later, remnants of the medicine need to be eliminated from your body by the liver and kidneys. Slowdowns at this stage means it may take longer for a drug to leave your body so it affects last longer. Common offenders. These over-the-counter and prescription medications are linked to potential problems for older adults. First, anti-anxiety medications. Prescription anti-anxiety drugs include a class of drugs called benzodiazepines, such as Valium, Ativan, or Klonopin. They can increase your risk for falls as well as cause confusion. In an older person, prolonging their action can cause unwanted effects, says Dr. Michael Craig Miller, an assistant professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. Second, antihistamines. Over-the-counter antihistamines offer quick allergy symptom relief, but some, such as chlortrimeton and diphenhydramine or Benadryl, can cause drowsiness and confusion in older adults, which can also lead to falls. Diphenhydramine or Benadryl is also the common ingredient in non-prescription sleep aids such as Nitol, Unisom, and Somanex. They may help you fall asleep, but they can make you groggy and unsteady when you awaken and try to walk. Third, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs or the NSAIDs. NSAIDs reduce fever, pain, and inflammation. They're available over-the-counter in lower doses, ibuprofen such as Advil and Motrin, or naproxen such as Aleve, and by prescription in higher doses. But long-term NSAID use is linked to ulcers, stomach bleeding, kidney problems, high blood pressure, and increased risk for heart attack or stroke. Number four, sleeping pills. Some benzodiazepines, such as Restoril or Halcyon, are used as sleep aids. They have been known to cause problems with daytime sleepiness and increased risk for falls, memory impairment, worsening of sleep disorder, breathing, and drug dependence, notes sleep expert Dr. Lawrence Epstein, an instructor in medicine at the Harvard Medical School. Similar drugs called non-benzodiazepines, such as Zolpidem, which is Ambien, Zaleplon, which is Sonata, and Esopiclone, such as Lunesa, have fewer side effects compared with benzodiazepines. But they still will put you at risk for sleepwalking and daytime sleepiness. Quote, the FDA just issued a new warning for these medications due to reports that a small number of people have experienced serious injuries from medication-related behaviors such as sleepwalking, sleep driving, and engaging in other activities while not fully awake, unquote. And finally, number five, the tricyclic antidepressants. Tricyclics are an older class of antidepressants. Examples include amitriptyline, which is Elavil, imipramine, or tofranil. Their side effects may be particularly difficult for older people, memory problems, confusion, constipation, dry mouth, blurry vision, irregular heart rhythms, and, for men, problems with urinating. What you should do when it comes to using sleep medications, use extreme caution. Sleeping medicines should be used only under the direction of a physician who can determine if they are appropriate for you and the problem you are having, Dr. Epstein says. Over-the-counter sleeping aids should be used only for a short-term problem. Avoid long-term use and consult with your doctor if the problem does not resolve quickly. With the right approach, your doctor can likely help you use these drugs for maximum benefit with the least risks. My view is not so much to avoid any of these medications, but to use them carefully and judiciously. That means minimizing doses, using only when necessary, and turning to other methods to manage symptoms when they arise, Dr. Miller suggests. From the Mayo Clinic health letter, peripheral edema, reducing problem swelling. You can't figure out why your shoes don't fit anymore. Far from being light on your feet, you feel like you're lugging around ankle weights. There's a feeling of excess fluid in your legs, and it doesn't make sense. The swelling of the legs, also called peripheral edema, has numerous causes. If there are no other signs or symptoms, mild leg swelling is relatively common and easily managed by making lifestyle changes, such as reducing your intake of salt and staying active. Losing weight also can lead to symptom improvement. However, peripheral edema is sometimes associated with a more serious underlying disease requiring medical attention. Fluid forces. Normally, the body maintains a careful balance of fluid movement between complex networks of blood vessels, the lymphatic system, and all of the tissues surrounding them. However, if this system is thrown off balance, the tiniest blood vessel or capillaries may leak fluid that builds up in surrounding tissues. The result is edema. Edema most commonly occurs in the lower legs and feet due to gravity. In addition to swelling, other signs and symptoms associated with edema may include stretched or shiny skin, especially after the legs have been below the level of the heart for prolonged time, such as when walking, standing, or sitting. Skin that stays indented for at least 5 seconds after being pressed. Peripheral edema typically affects both legs. Edema in only one leg may be related to other separate health conditions in that leg or the groin on the affected side. What's causing it? Physical exam can help sort out the cause of peripheral edema and help detect any serious underlying conditions. Your doctor will likely ask how long the swelling has been present, whether it affects one leg or both, what medications you take, what your diet has been like recently, and what other medical conditions or symptoms you have. Certain blood and urine tests may be done, as well as a chest x-ray or additional imaging, such as an ultrasound of the legs or heart. Mild edema of both legs without any other symptoms, especially when it's been present for less than a few days, usually signals a less worrisome cause, such as higher than usual salt consumption in recent days or prolonged standing or sitting. At times, peripheral edema occurs as a side effect of a drug. Drugs known to cause edema, including calcium channel blockers, oral corticosteroids, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, this anti-seizure drug, Lyrica, and also certain drugs for managing diabetes, particularly Actos and Avandia. If the cause is believed to be related to a medication, your doctor and pharmacist can discuss different treatment options to minimize the side effect. underlying medical causes. Peripheral edema can also be caused by a number of medical conditions. This is particularly likely if the swelling is prolonged, is confined to one leg, or occurs in conjunction with other signs and symptoms such as shortness of breath or high blood pressure. Causes may include weak or damaged leg veins. Over time, one-way valves that help keep blood moving towards your heart can weaken and stop working properly, allowing blood and eventually fluid to pool in your lower legs. Deep vein thrombosis, or DVTs. Edema may develop if a blood clot forms in the deep veins of your lower leg. Clotting usually affects only one leg and may produce swelling, pain, and redness. These symptoms require urgent medical attention. Congestive heart failure. If one or both of your heart's lower chambers loses the ability to pump blood effectively, blood can back up in the legs, ankles, and feet, leading to swelling. Failure of the heart's right chamber produces peripheral edema and, if severe enough, can lead to abdominal swelling. If the left chamber of the heart is affected, shortness of breath and difficulty lying flat in bed can occur due to the accumulation of fluid in the lungs. Obstructive sleep apnea. Many with this condition also have peripheral edema. Sleep apnea is also associated with a very serious condition of high blood pressure in the arteries between the heart and lungs, which is called pulmonary hypertension. Those most at risk include people who are overweight and older and those who have type 2 diabetes. Chronic kidney disease. Progressive damage to tiny filtering blood vessels, or the glomeruli, in your kidneys can produce a cascade of changes. These include salt retention, an abnormal amount of protein in the urine, and an abnormally low level of a certain protein, albumin, in the blood. Fluid buildup in combination with this low albumin level may produce peripheral edema and even edema involving the entire body. A damaged lymphatic system. The lymphatic system helps clear excess fluid from your tissues. Damage to that system, particularly due to lymph node removal during cancer therapy or damage to lymph nodes from radiation therapy or serious infection, may impair normal lymph node and vessel drainage, resulting in swelling in the affected limb. Finally, tumors. Rarely, leg swelling may be associated with pelvic tumors, putting pressure on blood vessels or the lymph system. Treatment options. Treatment steps depend on diagnosis of any underlying problems. If you have a medical condition that's contributing to the problem, the first treatment steps will likely be working to treat the underlying condition. There are various other ways to help prevent and reduce fluid retention. Your doctor may recommend limiting your consumption of salt. Wearing special compression stockings may help prevent fluid retention in your legs and feet. These stockings gently squeeze your legs in a way that helps promote blood flow from the legs back toward the heart. Stronger compression stockings require a prescription, while those with less compression are sold without one. Mild edema. Mild edema related to prolonged standing or sitting can usually be managed by lying down with the legs elevated above the level of the heart for an hour or two a day. Water aerobics or walking in a swimming pool is a particularly helpful form of exercise, as it may help redistribute excess fluids in the legs to other parts of the body. Working toward even moderate weight loss may be another important part of treating edema. For some with peripheral edema, a fluid-reducing water pill or diuretic may be prescribed. One of the most common diuretics is furosemide or Lasix, but the choice of drug is preferably based on your personal medical history. There are a number of home remedies. There are steps you can take at home to help reduce leg swelling. Activity and exercise that keeps you moving and using the muscles in your legs can help pump excess fluid back toward your heart. These methods also can help, especially when used in combination. News and our views. Weight training, a good motivator. Weight training, also referred to as strength training or resistance training, is an excellent way to improve fitness and build strength. Doing so can help improve mobility and balance and help manage weight and chronic conditions. In addition, the benefits may be more than physical. A study published in Scandinavian Journal of Medicine and Science in Sports suggests that weight training may also boost the confidence of older adults and increase their motivation to keep exercising. Researchers followed participants for 9 months of supervised weight training. When checked in a year after the study ended, almost half were still training at least once a week. Researchers noted participants increased self-confidence in their training abilities and capacity to cope with training obstacles. Participants also exhibited improved planning skills, such as when, where, and how to exercise, and increased motivation. While the study couldn't prove weight training itself caused these improvements, the many established benefits of this type of exercise make it a great choice for older adults. Mayo Clinic experts encourage older adults to participate in weight training at least twice a week. If you haven't been active, check with your doctor before starting. Consider finding small classes or trainers who have experience working with beginners or older adults so that you can learn proper technique and avoid injury. Using a trainer or taking a class provides an opportunity for socialization, another key component of healthy aging. Fecal incontinence, finding relief. If you're living with chronic fecal incontinence, you may be familiar with this scenario. You're at a coworker's retirement party when you feel the urge to have a bowel movement. Though you're able to quickly get to a bathroom, you discover that, much to your embarrassment, stool has leaked into your underwear. And unfortunately, this isn't the first time it's happened to you. Being unable to control bowel movements, called fecal incontinence, is a common condition in people as they age, particularly women. People with fecal incontinence may experience distress, anxiety, depression, or a drop in self-esteem. They may have a lower quality of life due to the fear of an accident preventing them from doing things they enjoy, such as exercising or attending social gatherings. They may also feel hopelessness, assuming that this condition is just another unfortunate and unfixable part of aging. However, fecal incontinence isn't a normal part of aging and isn't a problem that needs to be suffered in silence. There are multiple effective treatments to reduce symptoms or cure the condition. Causes of fecal incontinence. Typically, fecal incontinence falls into two categories: not being able to reach a bathroom before leakage occurs, urge incontinence, or lacking the sensation that lets you know you have to go to the bathroom with leakage occurring that you may not feel, which is passive incontinence. The cause of fecal incontinence isn't always known, but common conditions that may lead to it include muscle injury. Muscles called anal sphincters help provide a barrier to stop stool from leaking out. Common causes of damage of the sphincter include vaginal childbirth, particularly when an episiotomy is performed or forceps are used, and anal surgery, such as a procedure to correct hemorrhoids. Neurological problems, diabetes, multiple sclerosis, dementia, Parkinson's, stroke, and spinal injuries can lead to neurological issues that result in losing the sensation that you have to go to the bathroom. Reduced ability to store stool, conditions such as Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, or inflammation caused by radiation can make it difficult for the rectum to expand and store stool. Hardened stool that collects in the rectum, or an impaction. This can cause muscles in the area to relax, allowing liquid stool to leak around the hardened material. The risk of fecal impaction increases with immobility, dehydration, chronic constipation, or use of medications such as opioids. Diarrhea, irritable bowel syndrome, prior gallbladder removal, and gastroenteritis can lead to less formed and more liquid stool, which can be harder for the sphincter muscles to control. There are also dietary factors that may lead to diarrhea or looser stools, including caffeine intake, use of certain sugar substitutes, excess intake of fruit or fruit juice or sweetened drinks, and an intolerance of lactose and dairy products. Structural problems. Fecal incontinence may occur when the rectum drops down into or out of the anus, which is a rectal prolapse. It can also occur in women when the rectum protrudes through the vagina, which is rectocele. If your incontinence is frequent or severe, or it's causing you emotional distress, seek an evaluation from your primary doctor or a specialist such as a gastroenterologist. Treatment options. Once your doctor determines what is causing your fecal incontinence, he or she will recommend an appropriate course of treatment. Overall, no one treatment is considered better than the other for fecal incontinence, and a combination of therapies may be needed. The options are stool, bulking agents, products that thicken your feces, can reduce or stop leakage, fiber supplements including Citracell and Metamucil. Dietary modifications. Options may include limiting caffeine in food or beverage products containing sugar alcohols as sugar substitutes. Testing can be done for lactose intolerance or fructose intolerance. Fructose is found in some fruits and vegetables, as well as in high fructose corn syrup, which is often added to sweetened drinks and other products. Medications. Any diarrhea such as Imodium, Pepto-Bismol, Kaopectate, or Lamotil can reduce the frequency of stool leakage that's not related to constipation. Removing hardened stool. Your doctor can physically remove hardened stool or suggest an enema and offer medication to help you keep it regular. Scheduling bathroom breaks. Sitting on the toilet at the same time every day after a meal can make incontinence episodes less likely. Biofeedback. Biofeedback uses sensors to help you feel better and to help you better feel your pelvic floor muscles, allowing you to work on contracting and controlling them. Electrical stimulation. Sacral nerve stimulation uses surgically implanted wires or electrodes to send electrical impulses to the sacral nerve in the lower back. Injectable bulking agents. These gels are injected into the anal sphincter to help bulk tissue and narrow the anal opening to decrease leakage. Surgery. Surgery may be recommended to repair tears to sphincter muscles, such as those that occur after childbirth or surgery. Unfortunately, procedures to repair childbirth-related damage are less optimal when performed later in life. Surgically treating conditions such as rectal prolapse, rectocele, or hemorrhoids may help reduce or eliminate fecal incontinence. Colostomy is often a last resort if other options fail. The procedure attaches the colon to the abdominal wall, diverting stool. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mark Newman, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time, and if you have any comment or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Stay healthy.